A Deepening Twilight, written by Martin Hicks, narrated by John Delano Ziegler, Jr. Prologue. The sun had come out again as the autumn day drew on. Not full-blown sunshine yet, as the hazy clouds were only slowly dispersing, but sunshine, nevertheless, after a couple of dull days with chilly winds, which had hinted all too soon of the approach of winter. To be sure, the shadows now cast by that sun were pale and indistinct, but they were maybe enough to beguile a man into believing that brightness and warmth still had some part to play in the coming days. The indistinct orb of the sun itself was lower in the sky, to be sure, as the seasons advanced, making the sunshine more of a mellow pleasure at this time of the year, sufficiently removed from the searing, tormenting heat of high summer. It cast its gentle warmth on the weather-beaten features of those in that long column of men, wagons, and guns that wound its way on the road which climbed westwards to Swift Run Gap and on towards Port Republic at a junction with the Shenandoah Valley Turnpike further up ahead. Comments ranged up and down the column, as they always did, about the stupidity of commanders, who never seemed to know where they wanted their men to go or to be, and all of the seemingly pointless marching and countermarching that resulted from such dithering. The division had just days previously left the Shenandoah Valley, and they had hardly left before they had been directed to return. Only now it was to a place over 70 miles south of where they had previously been campaigning. But the endless marching and waiting were the lot of the soldier, and if they were not on this road, they would in all likelihood be on another one not that much different, or maybe worse still, in a pestilential trench somewhere outside of Richmond or Petersburg. So the complainers complained, but as they did so, others of the men around them simply nodded or grunted, keeping their place in the column, looking for other things to think about, or saving their strength for the march as they saw best. Corporal Daniel Ryan continued to do the latter with a measure of difficulty, still feeling the effects of the wounds which had seen him spend almost all of the previous month in sprawling Chimborazo Hospital in Richmond. His recovering legs still ached during a march of any length, and his breathing still involved discomfort from the effects of the shell fragment wound in his upper back. He looked across at his friend Mick Daly, who had suffered much more severe injuries at Gettysburg the previous year, and, despite having had over a year to recuperate, still hobbled on his strapped leg and regularly had to drop out of the column with an officer's pass. There was surely no conscious competition around their joint predicaments, but over the couple of days since Daniel had rejoined the Ogeechee Volunteer Rifles, or more simply, the Blues, as the men had long since titled their unit, each of them had noticed the other and would glance across as the day's labors tested them as though to measure how he was doing, and there had grown as a result a definite hint of not dropping out if he's still here between the two of them. So it was back to the valley for now, for the brigade and for the whole of Major General Joseph Kershaw's division of infantry, as, having been there for over a month supporting the Second Corps, the division had, at the start of last week, been recalled to the Richmond and Petersburg defenses by General Lee. But even as they had crossed the Blue Ridge Mountains towards the railroad town of Culpeper on their journey southeast, the Yankees had discovered this weakening of the Confederate forces in the valley around Winchester and had struck there with overwhelming force. Old Jubal Early's Second Corps troops had been whipped up there in Frederick County last week and forced into a hurried retreat to the south, suffering a further reverse when they tried to halt their pursuers just south of Strasburg. So the generals had changed their plans again, and Kershaw's men had been ordered to return. They were to rejoin the defeated Valley force with additional artillery and cavalry units also on the way, so they had heard, and maybe their scraped-together force could halt this latest ominous spread of the triumphant Yankee host into that fertile granary of the South whose produce did so much to sustain the defenders and the population of Richmond, 100 or more miles to the southeast, and currently besieged by General Grant's huge Union armies. To be sure, there were many fewer men making this march than had begun the spring campaign. A division of 4 brigades was an impressive force on paper, or when one talked about it. But each of those brigades now numbered under 1,000 men, and there were maybe a little over 10,000 more infantry under Early awaiting them. With cavalry and artillery, they could pull together a force of something over 15,000. But the Yankees, under that bow-legged, mean-spirited little Phil Sheridan, had 3 whole corps of infantry.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?